people love to help other people. So the last thing we want to do is kind of turn in on ourselves, get really insular and be like, oh, people think this of me. People love you still.
Yeah.
You're the greatest still. Layoffs are layoffs. And you just have to kind of talk yourself out of that and reach out and ask for help.
Hey, this is Allison, and welcome to the Inspire Budget Podcast, where we talk all things budgeting, debt, and saving money. Today, we are joined by Jesse Meekum, who is a personal finance expert and business leader. He is the founder of You Need a Budget, or YNAB, if you are very busy and important. I brought Jesse on to discuss what to do when you're laid off. It always seems like there are headlines that talk about how there are widespread layoffs and economic uncertainty. And many people are finding themselves in this difficult position where they are getting laid off or a partner is getting laid off. But being laid off doesn't have to mean the end of your career or your financial stability. In today's episode, Jesse will share some practical advice and insights on how to navigate the job market, manage your money, and take care of your mental and emotional well-being during this challenging time. Let's dive into today's episode. Welcome, Jesse, to the Inspire Budget Podcast. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So I want to talk about the news and how it seems like everyone is getting laid off from work. But then I also hear that unemployment is at its lowest, which doesn't seem to be checking out with what's happening in real life. So regardless of where the United States says we are when it comes to employment, I know that there are households hurting right now. There are people that are getting laid off from work. And so I want to turn to you as an expert for how these people can really set themselves up for success in terms of financially, and then also what they can do, or maybe someone who might get laid off, what they can do to prepare for this.
Yeah, absolutely. The first thing is, if you haven't been laid off yet and you're reading, you know, like layoffs, everyone's laid off now. That is not true. So we read about the exceptions. We read about the big layoffs, but so sometimes when you read it in the news, you feel like it's everywhere, and that's not entirely true. So if you're just feeling fearful because of that, the intake of those stories, I would just kind of check that and, you know, make sure you're okay there. If you have legitimate reasons to think that your job may be in jeopardy for one reason or another, then it is absolutely imperative that you start now to kind of make sure that you land softly. So, and we can go into the details of that if you'd like, but that's the start. Is you immediately will begin to say, okay, I've got to start kind of laying the groundwork for what other opportunities might there be out there? How do I reevaluate kind of what I want? A lot of times people will use a layoff as a good reason to think about changing roles, careers, changing positions. Yeah, careers. A lot of times it comes with a little bit of money to give you some runway. Not always, but a lot of the times it does. So yeah, you can kind of use it as a moment to reevaluate and figure out what you want to do next. It's a little bit like getting pushed out of a plane when you're skydiving. Like you're like, I don't know if I want to do this. And then someone gives you a shove and you're like, it's okay. It's okay.
Here we go. Have you ever skydived before?
I did one time.
Okay.
And then I got married and had kids and I was like, I'm not doing that anymore. But before all that, yeah, I did. And I highly recommend it. It was fantastic.
Yes. I've actually been twice before I got married and had kids as well. And it was one of the things, like you're up in the plane and I started second guessing it. And you're already strapped to someone. So it's like, well, there's no turning back now. So I guess the same is true for layoffs. Although I do think that, you know, people who are in a better position financially, they can approach layoffs with more of a view of, okay, maybe this is a time for me to shift careers. Yeah. Maybe this is an opportunity for me to do something different. However, I grew up and in my family, my dad was laid off several times in my childhood. And it was more of, oh my gosh, something needs to happen in our family. Like, he has to get a job. And if he doesn't get a job at a traditional 9-to-5, where else can he work? And I remember him working nights at Target to help bring in money for our family. And that is a lot different. That feeling is a lot different than being financially prepared. So that's what I want to talk about today, is how can people be financially prepared, whether or not it happens to you or a significant other. I want to talk about what we can do to set ourselves up. So let's say that someone does get laid off from their job. What are some of the first things that they should do? Because I know that that comes with a lot of emotions just right away. A lot of times it's sudden, it's unexpected. So what are, from your knowledge, what should people do kind of just like step by step?
Yeah, if they, if so, we'll setting aside, like maybe they're ready financially. Maybe they, I mean, some people live right on the razor's edge and when they're laid off, mm-hmm. different story. Another person has a bit of runway and they can kind of take their time. For either person in either situation, you do need to view your new job as finding a job. So mm-hmm. You need to pretend and do everything as if you are working a 9-to-5 or maybe more like 9-to-9 situation. Mm-hmm. And you really want to say, okay, my new job is now to get a job. And that means you are working like intentionally, intensively. It's not passively just throwing resumes around. You're thinking strategically. Mm-hmm. You're giving yourself deadlines, to-dos. You're being organized. It's like your new job is finding this job. So you approach it with the same tenacity, the same focus, the same skill and creativity that you brought to your other job. And that sometimes when people first land, they're just, they wake up like, I have nothing to do. It's like, no, you are busy. You are super busy. So let's get started on this new job. That's mm-hmm. like a little bit of a mindset thing, but it's so important. The other thing is for the psyche with staying busy with your new, maybe like mm-hmm. overtime job that you have. With this is it really helps your psychology. It just, mm-hmm. it really helps you stay kind of out of your head. It helps you divorce what happened from your identity, which can tricky for people. And so you just want to kind of stay heads down and just grind this new job you have of finding your new spot.
I completely agree with, I love what you said about how it allows you to divorce from your psyche, because I think that so many people, whether it's healthy or not, we don't need to debate this. I mean, I don't think it's healthy, so there's no debate. So often that happens over time, little by little, until we don't even realize it.
Yeah.
So when that is taken away, it feels like our purpose or our identity is taken away. Yeah. So you're almost like, okay, let's refocus that purpose onto finding a new job.
You have inherent value. Everyone has inherent mm-hmm. value, that period. So, but sometimes you'll view, oh no, now my spouse thinks I'm less. My spouse, mm-hmm. you know, like you'll, or maybe my dad, my mom, whatever it is, my kids mm-hmm. think less of me. And we are doing that to ourselves. The other aspect to this is you really want to kind of reach out and start to ask for lifelines from people. So you would go to your spouse, obviously, but maybe less mm-hmm. obvious. You would go to your network and you would just be totally blunt. Hey, I just found out my new job is I have to find a new job. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to be heads down on this. I would love your help. And you just let people know you are looking and let people know that you need their help. And people love to help other people. So the last thing we want to do is kind of turn in on ourselves, get really insular and be like, oh, people think this of me. People love you. Still, you're the greatest still. Layoffs are layoffs there. And mm-hmm. you just have to kind of talk yourself out of that and reach out and ask for help. And it is very gratifying to help someone. And so don't steal that from someone else. Give it to them. Give them that gift of letting them help you. And it really is that way. It mm-hmm. really is an uplifting thing for someone else to lend a hand. And so don't be proud.
Yes.
In this, humble yourself mm-hmm. a little bit and just recognize, when I'm on the other side of this someday down the road, I sure hope someone comes to me and asks for help also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard not to let your ego, right? Our ego can be so big and control us and lead us down a path that makes us not want to let people know what's happened. But many times layoffs, they don't really have to do with your performance. Can we address that?
No,
real
not
quick?
At all. Yeah. That's the definition of a layoff is that you are not being fired. Right.
Yes. So I want you to address the difference actually right now between, because I think that knowing that can help people separate from it, meaning being a reflection on who they are as a worker.
Right. Yeah.
So why do companies lay off?
They lay off for any number of reasons, but mm-hmm. bottom line is the bottom line. So mm-hmm. a lot of these tech companies that are the famous ones right now in the news, they basically are getting back to normal. They were leaning so far over their skis. And I mean, I'm one of those companies that was trying to hire engineers and hire designers. And it was like everybody needed anybody. And now suddenly it's like, oh, we have to, they're just getting back to normal. What we just mm-hmm. experienced was, I would say, fairly abnormal as far as that kind of labor squeeze that we had. So mm-hmm. a layoff is just going to be a bottom line situation. Now, it may be that, you know, you're compared to someone else and they think, well, we'd rather have, you know, Allison than Jesse. And that might be a little bit of like a nod to performance. okay, this is life, and this is part of being in the workforce. So we just have to kind of swallow that. But you're not being fired. Being fired is when you've done something that you've given the company cause, and they've said, hey, your performance is subpar, or this or that, or political, any number of reasons, but they'll say, we're letting you go, you're fired, versus, hey, we're doing layoffs, you were on the right side of this list, or the wrong side, and we're letting you go. So it's going to be a bottom line thing for the most part. Sometimes companies will kind of follow suit. So you hear of some other company that's doing layoffs, and maybe they were quote unquote justified, whatever that means. And then some other companies kind of looking for a reason to right size, is a phrase I hate, but to get things a little leaner.
Correct.
And so they'll say, hey, layoffs. Hey, everybody, layoffs. We got to do layoffs. And they really maybe don't have to, but they're just looking to operate leaner. And it may be to their detriment, or it may keep them alive. Mm-hmm. I'd have to look at each company at that point. But business owner, I tend to grow slowly and so cautiously that people are like, what are you doing? But I'm so afraid of getting over my skis. And that's what happened with a lot of these businesses. It's part of the cycle.
Yeah. Which I do want to clarify for anyone who's listening. That means that they overhired. They hired, and now it's almost like a self-correction.
Yeah. It's just happening.
Or it's not a self-correction. It's a business correction.
Yeah. It just has to happen. It's like with real estate. It goes crazy hot. Yeah. It can't do that forever. It corrects. It's just cycles.
Today's episode is brought to you by my budget to build wealth. Here's the truth. I refuse to believe that wealth is just for the rich. I believe that wealth can be built on a budget without sacrificing what you love to spend money on. I fully believe that budgeting is the quickest, most effective way for you to reach your money goals. So whether your goal is to stop living paycheck to paycheck, pay off those student loans that have been hanging over your head, or find room in your budget every single month so that way you can start investing for your future, you're going to need a guide, a plan to get yourself there, which is exactly what I'm sharing in my free training, Budget to Build Wealth. In this training, I'm going to be sharing 3 massive mistakes that people make with their budget and their financial plan, so that way you can avoid them. I'm going to be sharing with you the secret to freeing up more money in your budget each month, so that way you can send extra money to your goals. And I'm going to be sharing with you my tried and true 4-step framework to budgeting your way to wealth without giving up what you love. Plus, there is a very special free gift for anyone who stays until the end. You can sign up by going to inspiredbudget.com/class, or just click the link in my show notes. You'll be able to choose a time that works for your schedule, and I'll see you there. So how do you feel like people can balance themselves? Because we talked about the ego, we've talked about making sure that your new job is finding a job that you still have value as a person, you still have purpose, your layoff is not necessarily a reflection of your work. So how do we find a balance, or someone who's in this position, of still realizing this, but also searching for a job and doing so confidently? Mm-hmm. Because I think sometimes it can eat at your confidence, no matter how much positive self-talk you have. So how do you find the balance in taking care of yourself and your mind, and then also really finding a new job as quickly as possible? And then another question is, you talked about finding a job and networking. What are some other ways to kind of replace that income fast?
Yeah. I mean, there's that, like your dad, bless his heart, working at Target at night. Like that's an option. There, you can look at all kinds of side hustles, ways to make it through. I think those are short lived a lot of the time. And so I don't like to give that as kind of straight up advice. If you were working 9 to 5, you liked it, you should try and replace what you were doing. Mm-hmm. It takes a long time to replace full-time income with some kind of a side hustle, unless you get lucky or you're crazy gifted at it. I mean, when I started YNAB, it took me, I think we were in year 6 before it was like, oh, this supports the family, those things, like people will say them, you'll see a TikTok about it or whatever. It's like, hey, start a side hustle. And it's like, no, those take a long time to get going.
Yeah.
You need to replace your income with the same way you were doing it before.
And I will say he did that after a while, I think, from my memories. I mean, I don't have a timeline in front of me, but I remember it must have been maybe after unemployment ran out or after the severance was out. But it was after a while, and he would look for a job during the day and he'd go in the afternoons and evenings to Target. And it was a very humbling experience, I'm sure.
Yeah. I had a good friend that just went through 8 months, well, I think 8 or 9 months looking for a job. And the higher up you are in a business, so the, you know, the more money you made, it's like proportionately longer to replace that. So if you're a frontline worker at one fast food chain and you get laid off, you can pop over to another one in 4 hours. But when you're a high level executive and suddenly you're needing to find another high level executive position, that can take a lot longer. So just to back kind of a little bit of a tangent here, but when you're making good money, you're going to need longer runway, which means you need to be setting yourself up with more of a cash reserve than someone that is a blue collar worker that, provided all jobs are gone in an industry, they can say, hey, I worked line here, I can work line over here. They can replace it very quickly. But as you climb that income scale, you really need to make sure that you're setting aside reserves that allow for you to take the time necessary to replace that kind of job, you know, with what you had before. So that's a little bit of an aside, but.
Do you ever recommend somebody taking a job that is a step down from what they were doing?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. If you feel like you have to. It sounded like your dad did that for a while to cover it up, you know, like to cover the gap, right? He's like, I've got to do this for now. And that's just, you just do what you do. At the end of the day, we do what we have to do. Mm-hmm. And there's no article, no podcast episode, nothing's going to tell you different. They'll try and tell it to you differently. They'll try and say, oh, this and this. But at the end of the day, like, you got to do what you got to do. And I mean, I had another friend that graduated during the slump back in 08. These things happen. And he had a master's degree in accounting. I had graduated in 06, landed a job full time, off to the races. He graduated in 08, no jobs. Just so he worked. He did landscape. Now he's he's 23, 24, did landscaping for a year. Lane pavers and leveling, grading, chalk lines, the whole thing, because it wasn't panning out yet. So, I mean, he just did what he had to do. And then he ended up getting that accounting job. So we do that, and it's appropriate and fine that we do that. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, the only thing you don't want to do is start looking around and saying, hey, someone owes me something. You got to kind of make it happen on your own.
Okay. So we talked about making sure that your new 9 to 5 is finding a job, networking with others. What other tips do you have for kind of just finding a job that fits you after you have been laid off and you have made sure that, you know, this is not part of your identity?
I mean, I'm no expert in finding work that you absolutely love or anything like that. I would probably, I'll just say from my own experience, when we hire people at our company, we are looking for core value fits. So we're looking for people that are genuine, that are effectively communicating, that are humbly confident. And so we have the list of seven core values. You may take a little bit of time. Like, one of the projects you could do in your new job is to determine what your core values really are, like who you are, not what you aspire to be, but what you are right now. It comes easily to you, that kind of a core value situation. So you would write those down, and then you would want to start to look for companies that had those same core values. And then when you find that resonance, you'll find the interview is, I mean, head over tails easier, because they're you and you're them. You have a little piece of that company inside of you already. And so a good company recognizes that and said, oh, Allison, she checks all of our boxes. She's hired. She's one of us. She always has been. We just hadn't found her yet. That kind of a thing. So if you get really clear on what you value, like what your character attributes are, not just like, oh, I'm looking for a job with flexibility, that like everybody is, or not like I'm looking for one where they respect, like everybody, or integrity, not these weak, like everyone does this kind of stuff, but real core values that are you, where I could say, Allison, are we missing anything? You're like, no, these are all it. That's you. And then you are on the hunt for a company that has a little bit of Allison in it, and you guys just meet up and it works. That's how we hire at YNAB. And we do occasionally lose people. They get a great job somewhere else or whatever, but we very, very rarely have people leave because they're just like, I just don't feel like I almost would say never. And it's because we have such a good core value match between the person and the company that it just, that bond is tight. So that's one of the projects that I would assign first in your new job is to be really clear on what your core values are. And then just start finding companies that show those, that express them, that you know, kind of plant a flag with them.
I want to know what your core values are now.
Oh, you're going to put me on the spot. So genuine is the first one.
Okay.
Ownership is one. Effective communication. Mm-hmm. Humbly confident is one. Mm-hmm. Someone that passionately pursues growth. Helpful and empathetic. I think I got all. I think that was it. I think I got
that. We'll say that was seven.
Yeah.
I love that.
Seven. Nobody go back and count. So.
I have my own values, but I forgot what they are. I would have to look them up. But I want to say, like, for mine, it's very much like authenticity and how I show up as a leader. And then like honesty, that's definitely one of mine. So I do have some. And then also just how I want to treat my employees.
Yeah.
Or the people that work with me. A lot of it has to do with them. So, oh, I love that. That's a great tip. And I think I think so many times we think we're going to be twiddling our thumbs whenever we are searching for a job. People might be thinking, well, Jesse, how am I going to find time? How am I going to find enough jobs to apply for between 9 to 9, like you said? But it's not all about resume writing and applying. It's about the research and the look internally at what you really want and keeping your mind open and thinking outside of the box.
Yeah, absolutely. And then networking is a big part of it. Your job will likely come from your network, like a good job that you want will likely come from your network. So just don't ignore that. Start warming up old contacts and then start to make a to-do. Once you do land the job, start to say, okay, I want to make sure that my network stays strong and warm and ready to go next time. And so you're kind of, you're building up a little bit of a battle chest of cash. Just for safety reasons, and you build up a little bit of a battle chest with network, and network will take you longer than cash. That will take you further, and it's far more valuable. A strong network, people will catch you when you fall. Cash runs out, and it's just cash. So you really got to recognize the real asset that you have is that network. So give to it, give, and then occasionally you'll need some help, and there'll be people there for you.
I love that. Oh, gosh. So do you have any parting words of wisdom or anything before we move on to our three questions about anyone who might be facing a layoff or even someone, I guess, who has a family member that is facing a layoff?
I would be remiss if I didn't say it's a great time to think through your own personal, like your own priorities, what you want out of life, and make sure that you pare the budget down, the money plan down to just the bare essentials. See this as an exercise in how small you can make your burn rate. Like really get crazy on just slowing down the flow out with the money. Part of this is necessity, but a lot of times people will turn to their money to cope with the fact that they've been kind of knocked on their back a little bit. So we don't want to do that. We don't want to shop ourselves into good feelings that are totally transient. You want to say, oh, I've been dealt something here. I'm going to handle it. One of those ways you handle it is getting really clear on what you want your money to do during that time. And I've made a whole career of telling people, know what you want and then have your money do what you want. And in a layoff time, it's just everything's a little scarier, a little tighter. Mm-hmm. Everything's just higher, like amped up. Conversations with your spouse will be more loaded than they usually would be. Mm-hmm. A random shopping trip to Target suddenly carries loads of baggage that it didn't before. And so you have to kind of recognize that all this is going to be like a little bit amplified, but really get clear on what you really want your money to do and see it as an exercise in like, oh, let's just see how down to the bone we can cut this for a while. When you come through the other side, you'll have a job and you'll have learned that you can live on far less than you were before. Mm-hmm. Maybe that'll pave the way toward building up a little bit of a cash cushion and reaching different financial goals.
That's so true. And also remembering that it's just a season. It's not going to last that way forever. And so whenever you cut back and you do live on this bare bones, as I like to call it, this isn't your forever. This is a season. And it's okay to sacrifice for a season so that you can live in abundance later.
Yeah. Yeah. You're just sprinting for a bit.
Yeah, exactly. So at the end of every interview, I like to ask my guests three questions to get to know you a little bit better. Don't think too hard about them. I don't know if your assistant told you about these questions.
She told me they were questions and I made the mistake of not looking at them. So,
perfect.
Okay.
I love it. Okay. The first one is, what's one thing you're looking forward to?
Ooh, I have a golf trip in Scotland coming
up.
Oh, wow. I've never been.
And you're a golfer, I assume. You're not just like.
Yeah, you have to be at least an 18 handicap, which means you mainly are shooting bogey golf, which is right down my alley. So I am super excited about it.
That's amazing. Yeah,
so excited but for it.
You're not just going to golf. You're also going to.
Nope, just golf, what? Allison.
Are you serious?
It's the home of golf. It's where golf comes from. It's like, it's a mecca. It's a golf mecca. Yeah. I'll go another time and look at castles and.
Oh my gosh.
Find like my family tree there. You know, I have ancestors that, but for this trip, it's like a business trip, but you know, air quoting business there. Yeah, business trip. But yeah, I'm not bringing my family. It'll be a week plus away from the family, which will be the not fun part, but just being able to play like the original courses. I'm so excited. Wow. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. My husband would love that. He loves golfing. He doesn't go nearly enough.
Cool. Yeah. That's always true.
Yeah. With kids, especially.
Oh, so kids.
That sounds cool. It's hard. He tries to take them with him sometimes, but they can really only do like 9 holes. Yeah. So where we used to live, there was a 9 hole course and that was like perfect for them. So he needs to start doing that more often. Okay. The second question is, what's one money mistake you've made that you would tell everybody to avoid?
I think the biggest one was fairly recent. I do experiments because I'm trying to always teach people like 4 rules, help you change your relationship with money, yada, yada, yada. I experimented for a year, Julie and I did, my wife, Julie, with not doing what we taught. We were like, well, let's just experiment with not doing a budget. And just like we have money, like money comes in, we're doing fine. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, yeah, I'll just kind of see what the checking account balance is and see if it goes up or down. It went down. You know, I can report after a year. It went down. And like I just felt like, money just disappeared. Mm-hmm. So we thought we had habits. That like, oh, these habits will protect us. Like we don't buy lots of clothes. We don't eat out a lot, blah, blah, blah. And the money just disappeared somewhere. I couldn't tell you where. So that was a mistake. I'm not doing that experiment again. I do it for science, you know.
There you go.
That was a rough one.
That does sound rough. And I love budgeting. So I would not ever want to
I would wish
that.
It
especially
on
for a year. That's a commitment. Oh, yeah.
You got to do a whole year. Cause it's gotta be like a long, like it's gotta get all the season of a year. Right.
No,
but we lost a little bit of the habit of it and we had to get back into like, you know, managing our money appropriately. You know what our takeaway was from that? A little bit of an aside. Our takeaway was people will ask me sometimes, well, if you make blah, blah, blah money, like if you're Bill Gates or whatever, do you need a budget? And the answer is the more money you make, the more you need it because you have more at your disposal, which means you could do more great things with it. But if you squander it, if you just let it, you know, just slip through your fingers and you're earning all this money, what a tragedy. Like you're one of the few people that are just making more money than you even need. So heaven forbid you just waste it. It's a resource. And it's
that's
a resource,
so
whether or not you think it is. It's
that
just
is
a resource.
So true. Because I think about us and my husband and I are comfortable in terms of money. But if we don't write a budget and include charitable donations, it won't necessarily happen. And we will spend that money on something else.
Yeah.
It's not sitting there at the end of the month unspent. It will be spent on something, who knows what, but not where we originally wanted it to go.
Right.
So
glad that Bill Gates has a budget, you know, where he's like, oh, let's eliminate malaria. That's one of his budget line items or whatever. Like, that's a good thing. There are a lot of extremely wealthy people in history that have built amazing things, have installed parks, have, I mean, all kinds of philanthropy has happened because someone decided they thought they should do something with their resources. Mm-hmm. And you could say, well, maybe they're doing it because their ego, I'll take the park with someone's ego attached to it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm fine with that. So, but it's someone that was like, oh, I feel like I should do something more with all of that I've been given and all that I have. That's a fantastic thing. Now, if you're really on a super tight budget, you don't make a lot, then it's more important for you to make sure that you're really clear and intentional with what you want your money to do because you don't have all the wiggle room. You know, of the Rockefellers or whatever. So
the last question I have for you, it's really just finish this sentence. And it is my favorite thing I've ever spent money on is
my table saw.
Your table saw. That's a first.
Yeah.
I think
That's a tough one ever.
We're going with that
ever,
one.
You know, but.
It does say ever. I was like, I mean, I don't say ever, but I did. It's like, right here. I'm looking at it.
Well, I mean, should I say like my wife's wedding ring? You know, someone
already did that one.
Yeah.
I asked my husband this question and he said, our kids' hospital bills. I was like, that's a stupid answer.
Yeah. He's like,
I like this. Your table saw. Okay. Is this your hobby? Is this what you like to do on the side? Woodworking. Mm-hmm. Cool. Do you have a whole like shed setup?
Yes. It's way more than my skills require. But yeah, it's like a little escape. It's not digital.
That's awesome.
You know, it's not in front of the computer. And the table saw cuts things straight and true and smooth. Mm-hmm. It's glorious.
So, do you have something you're working on right now to build?
Yeah, I'm working on shop furniture. So I'm working on a miter saw station. So it's a mobile station where my miter saw will sit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very exciting.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's exciting. I thought you were going to say a Scotland golf trip, but I'm glad you didn't. I like table saw better.
I made my second daughter, I made her a jewelry box for Christmas this year.
Oh.
And she loved it. And I was like, will she like this? Because it's amateur. It's like, I don't have a lot of skills. But she, after she opened it, she said, oh, I'm going to keep this forever.
Oh.
And I was like, oh man, even though it's poor quality, she recognized like her dad spent an inordinate amount of time doing it. So
exactly.
Yeah. Like that kind of thing. You don't Instagram that, you just enjoy it, you know? And so that's why I like the woodworking. You get to learn.
I love it.
You get to be away from the computer. Love it.
Yeah. That's great. Mine is embroidery.
Oh yeah.
Yes. And I sound like a grandma, and that's fine. I'll live in my grandma ways.
Yeah.
But
grandmas are
it's
great.
It's like just having something to do with my hands. It's not scrolling on my phone. As someone who has ADHD, I find myself scrolling my phone. It's like, no, I can just sit back and just create something with my hands. Like you said, off the computer, offline. I can listen to an audiobook, and I don't know what I'm going to do with all of these things I'm embroidering.
Doesn't even matter.
It doesn't. It really doesn't. I think I'm going to text some of my friends and say, here are some things I have. Who wants me to mail you something? Because it just brings me joy. So.
Yeah, a couple years ago, I think it was like end of 2020, and I was getting tired of, everything. I grabbed at Michael's, you know, the whatever shop. I haven't been there since, but
craft
store. Yeah, I grabbed some crochet stuff, and I learned how to crochet.
Cool.
And by learned how, I mean like literally.
Yeah.
I specialized in oven mitts.
That's like perfect. Pot holders.
Pot holders, things.
Oven mitts, that would be hard.
Way would I do an oven mitt. But a square. I specialized in squares or rectangles.
Okay, I like it. So. I love it. Well, I specialize in the ones that have pre-printed patterns.
Oh, there we go.
So, it's just like, it's just something to do, something different. Mm-hmm. But, well, Jesse, I'm so glad that you joined us on the podcast today. Please let everyone know where they can learn more about you and about YNAB.
Yeah. So I'm not really on the social stuff, but you can find us at YNAB.com, YNAB.com. We have a 34-day free trial for our software. But before you jump into the software, do one of our classes, one of our workshops, and learn the four rules we teach. They will really have you loving how you spend your money. If you're feeling guilty when you're spending, then there's a problem. You should enjoy it. Mm-hmm. If you're stressed when you spend, that's a problem. So learn the four rules, and whether or not you use our software, follow the rules. And that's all I have to say. That's my calling right there.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode with Jesse. If you're loving the Inspire Budget podcast, it would mean the world to me if you would actually just share this podcast with someone you know. You can actually just hit the little share button on whichever podcast player you're listening to and actually text it straight to a friend. And you can even say, hey, I'm listening to this podcast and I thought you would like it. That is a wonderful way for my podcast to reach new listeners, and I would appreciate it so much. I'll be back next Thursday with a brand new episode of the Inspire Budget podcast. I'll see you then.